Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. And Jack Hutchins is back in the co-hosting chair. Jack, how are you doing?
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me. I am not too bad, although I had a rough night's sleep last night and a pretty awful swim session this morning. So ended up finishing the set early. Just one of those days, I think. It's fatigue has built up a little bit the last couple of weeks, so live to fight another day. But how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I did also, actually. I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know if it was the rain that woke you up as well, but that was it for me. It was really hammering on the roof. I was going to ask about a training highlight, but since you mentioned the rough swim, perhaps we'll take a low light instead. So what was the swim meant to be? Why was it so bad that you decided to cut it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still coming back from this crash, so a few weeks out of the water is kind of still showing, basically. It was a threshold session of 200s, and I was kind of descending the turnarounds as a set that we talked about a few weeks ago. And yeah, I was swimming slow from the off, basically. And when that turnaround started to get pretty tight towards the back end, I could feel that I was through LT2 and it was going to be a real slog to get it done. So yeah, in order to kind of fight another day, I just called it there and kept the kind of stimulus, as it were. I still managed 2K of threshold work, but yeah, I had another three 200s to go, which, oh no, sorry, no, 2.2K I managed. I missed two. So it wasn't too bad, but yeah. Yeah, just a rough day, really. I got a threshold session later on the bike, so we'll see how that goes. Yeah, hopefully got a bit of caffeine in me now, so I'll be feeling a bit better for that one.
Oh, that helps. Caffeine or cake. I had a cake-fueled run last night, and that went surprisingly well for a late night run, I have to say, because usually I don't like to run or train at all after. I don't know. I've become used to not doing any training after about starting at latest at 5 o'clock over many, many years, the last few years. But now, yeah, my schedule is a bit different. So I had to do it at 8 o'clock, or yeah, I think it was 8 o'clock or close to 8 o'clock when I started, but went surprisingly well. But that was after a significant amount of cake earlier in the afternoon. I had some people over for coffee. So that's another way to I guess fuel your sessions and start with a lot of glycogen on board.
Yeah, nice. That is pretty late, and I guess the run went well, but maybe that contributed to the bad night's sleep.
Yes, that is entirely possible.
But at least you got the work done.
Yeah. No, it was a good week, actually. It was only my second week that I managed, it's in a long while since the end of November before I got sick, that I got to 90 kilometers of running with two quality sessions, a threshold session and a VO2 session. So, and that's basically what I hope I will be able to do throughout this year, keep that volume around 90K. I would like to go higher, but I don't know if my body can tolerate it. So that's probably where I'll try to stay cool with that and not try to go too much higher. But if I can do that consistently with two quality sessions, I think that I'll see some good progression on my run.
Yeah, for sure. If you can get a few weeks in the legs, and you never know, maybe you can step it up again after that. I also need to thank you for letting me use your treadmill on Friday, because just to let the listeners know, it was a rough day weather-wise in Portugal here. And
been a rough month.
Yeah, I couldn't face the track and I missed the gym opening hours, so Michael let me use his treadmill, which was a very welcome addition to my training day and made my session a lot easier to get done. So yeah.
Yeah, and it was good for me to get confirmation that the numbers, the paces that it shows don't seem to be completely off, because sometimes when I'm in a good period I feel that, ooh, I'm not sure that this treadmill isn't just trying to flatter me with with inflated numbers. But you said that it was seen quite all right, so I was happy with that. But
this is the thing though, right? When it's faster, you never complain, do you? You just stay, oh, I must be in good shape. It's only when the treadmill's slow that you start questioning everything.
Well, no, I have been questioning it when it's been going too fast. Not so much recently though, but during the autumn I had some fears that when training went really well and that ended up being a question. But I'll get back to that soon enough, I hope and think. Let's get into our topic though for today. So we'll continue with our power rankings and we'll get on to run sessions. And as usual, I have a bonus session. I don't know if you have one or are you just strict top five?
Yeah, I've got the five again.
Okay.
You with your indecision.
My bonus. Yeah, my indecision. Exactly. So my bonus session here, or number six on the list, is a marathon specific session and it's over unders. So I would normally do a prescribed 3 to 5 rounds of 5 kilometers and these are like rolling continuous 5 kilometers as 1 kilometer at 10 seconds faster than marathon pace, or in mile it would be around 15 seconds faster, 1 kilometer at 10 seconds slower or 15 seconds slower, 1 kilometer again at 10 seconds faster, 1 at 10 seconds slower, and then 1 kilometer a bit easier. So steady, not easy, but steady, around 30 to 45 seconds slower per kilometer than marathon pace, which would be 45 to a minute, 70 seconds per mile slower than marathon pace. So you have, basically, you go faster, slower, but always quite close to marathon pace, not veering too much from that. And then you have 1 kilometer for 4 kilometers, and then you have 1 kilometer that is still well into zone 2, not an easy jog, but also not hard. And you do roll through that 3, 4, or even 5 times if you go to the very, like, the highest level of the session. And that ends up being a really good session to work around marathon pace. And I mean, Canova, for example, has a lot of sessions similar to that one. I wouldn't say that this is exactly a session that I've read that he has, at least, but inspired from that methodology for sure.
Yeah, that's an awesome session. And yeah, I think there's a lot of his Canova's workouts out there online, right? And that's a classic. So what would be the total volume of that if you're doing the 3 by 5K, I guess, with a bit of a warm up and a cool down? It's not a massive run, but
no, that would be basically when you're starting to get into your marathon specific build. Maybe you would start with that, but then you would go into 4 by 5K. Basically, I would kind count the final kilometer of each 5K as rest, but it's not easy rest. So you have 4 kilometers per round that is around marathon pace or averages out at marathon pace. So you could get only 12 kilometers if you only do 3 rounds, or you could get 16 kilometers if you do 4 rounds, or 20 kilometers if you do 5 rounds. But also the fact that the rest is quite steady contributes, it's part of this session. It means that even 20 kilometers of marathon pace ends up being quite challenging because you're never getting a long, easy rest or anything. It's kind of almost continuous.
Yeah. And I mean, would you have this as kind of the last block going into the marathon, or would you have that from, you know, base period out as well?
It would be in the specific period, which might depend on, it depends on the periodization of the athlete and the athlete's familiarity with the marathon. But for a marathon, I would like to have, let's say, 12 weeks of pretty much focusing on building up the specific sessions. So from there on, it would definitely be featured, but I like to roll through this session and a couple of other marathon specific session, one that is basically just marathon pace, and then one that may or may not make an appearance later on my list. So we might hear more about that.
Yeah, nice. No, I use very, very similar approach, similar sessions. I think the thing with the marathon pace workout is people get a little bit carried away with wanting to run 100% of their marathon pace all the time, right, for these kind of sessions to almost confirm fitness. But it's having it shuttling kind of a bit above and a bit below and sprinkled in like that is a lot more manageable in terms of consistency to back it up with other workouts within the week.
Yeah, it's also about not putting all your eggs in one basket. It's almost like I don't want the athlete to get too slow from the marathon training. So even though it's definitely not speed work by any means to go 10 seconds faster at marathon pace, at least you're making sure that you're touching on slightly faster work there. And then, I mean, again, coming back to the Canova terminology, his premise, I guess, is that you basically want to become really good at utilizing lactate. So you would build up a little bit more lactate when you go faster, and then you would teach the body to utilize that lactate in the slower the under marathon pace in terms of, or let's say slower than marathon pace segments. So that's the physiological theory. And to be honest, I don't care so much for the physiological theory here, but I think that it's worth it to not just run steady all the time. It can for sure be easier if nothing else mentally, but it's also about having slightly different stimulus, giving a different challenge to your body, and not just, because otherwise it just gets used to the same thing and it stops adapting almost. So that's why I like having a rotating cast of a few different types of sessions that are all variations on a theme, but those slight differences, I think, helps keep the stimulus a bit better, you know, almost.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess the ability of the athlete would change the physiology of that type, that kind of change the focus, right, a lot. If you're running a bit of a slower marathon, you're not going to be up around those kind of lactate shuttling clearance levels.
That's absolutely true. And then it's also a bit more about maybe learning how to pace and so on. And to be honest, I would maybe be less likely to use this session if somebody's training for a 4-hour marathon or something like that. Or I think maybe 3.5 is where I would start to see more value in adding a session like this. And certainly when you're getting to 3 hours and below faster, then it becomes more and more valuable. But yeah, at the slightly slower marathons, yeah, maybe less useful. I would definitely admit that might be the case.
Yeah, no, I agreed. All right, so I'll go into my number 5. I mean, the order for mine, it's a bit up in the air, honestly. It's hard to pin it down. But starting off with some classic hill reps, we got 12 by 1 minute. I guess this is a VO2 max workout. And for this one, you want to find a hill around 5 to 8% gradient. You want it to be steep enough that you can feel the extra force and knee drive required, but not so steep that you're not able to run fast with good mechanics. So I guess the gradient will change a little based on your level. But it's also better if the gradient is consistent so you can find a good rhythm and you're not having to change your pace up halfway up the hill. So execution-wise, 1 minute up the hill, around about RPE 8 to 9 out of 10. Jog back recovery. Try not to walk. You want to keep the heart rate up, and the recovery should take about 115 to 130, depending on the gradient. And yeah, as I said, you want to focus on good form, arm drive, knee drive, relax, kind of still torso. You can break the session up into two blocks, especially for more anaerobic athletes where the lactate probably builds up quite a lot quite quickly. But the recovery should be active, so it kind of allows that partial clearance without fully dropping the heart rate, and it keeps it as a good kind of VO2 max aerobic stimulus across the session.
Yeah, no, like I said, that's a classic. I really like that. And yeah, what sort of grade would you recommend if people are looking for, if you have many options for hills, which grade would you choose ideally?
I said 5 to 8%, which I guess is quite a big range. Probably lean more towards the 5 there. But yeah, it's kind of also just make the best of what you've got. But yeah, if you're spoiled for choice, then probably, yeah, that 5 to 6 maybe.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Would you progress the session? Would you do more than 12 or?
Yeah, maybe slightly I have progressed the session for sure up to 15, but I don't think it's super necessary, honestly. It's already a quite decent volume at this intensity, and if we're looking at the objectives and what we want out of it, I don't think we necessarily need to go much longer. Yeah, do you agree with that?
Yeah, it depends on what the stimulus is. Maybe if the stimulus is pure VO2 max, then I would want to go a bit longer. But I think with hill reps, or at least how I think about them, a lot of it is also about maybe more like, it's partially about economy. It's about getting the muscles to fire really well, working on form, like you said, and it gives you a lot of good option, good it facilitates that for you when you're running uphill versus on the flat. So I think there are other aspects of it, and there are maybe slightly different fatigue factors as well.
Mm.
So I do tend to agree that I would probably do slightly less volume than I would do with a classic flat VO2 max session. It depends on what the focus is. If I really wanted to focus on VO2 max, I would go a bit longer. But I think I would use this as a bit of a mixed session with also working on form and muscular power and so on.
For sure. I guess, the difference is with a flat VO2 max session is that you can have the shorter static recovery in order to keep that heart rate up. With this, you wouldn't want to walk back recovery. You want to kind of keep it as a moderate jog. So overall, the body is still 24 minutes at that kind of intensity, right? Like 24 minimum. That's if you're coming out quite fast. It's still a long period of time to be, at this intensity, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. If you do the recoveries properly active, then that makes sense. Which leads me nicely to my number five, which is a fartlek session. And this is, it has some recency bias to it, to be honest. Very few of my athletes have seen it yet, but I have been experimenting with it personally, and I really like this session, I have to say. So my goal was I wanted to do some VO2 work, and not just hill reps, because that's something that I definitely do. That's what I did yesterday. My evening session was a VO2 hill rep on the treadmill, though. But I wanted to be able to do some faster running, but not so fast that I risk injury, which I had some niggles and always had to manage that a bit. So I wanted to use a kind of fartlek type session where the active recoveries mean that you keep that oxygen uptake quite high without necessarily having to go super fast in the intervals themselves. So this session is based on that premise, and it's two rounds where each round consists of first 2 minutes on, 1 minute off, 2 by 1.5 minute on or 90 seconds on, 1 minute off, 3 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off, and 4 by 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. So you have only 60 seconds off throughout the 2 minutes, 90 seconds, 1 minute. And then, so it ends up being basically a 2-to-1 work to rest in when you start, then a 3-to-2, and then a 1-to-1 towards the end there. So you end up building quite nicely your heart rate and your oxygen uptake in the early parts. And then you can go to a 1-to-1 work to rest and it stays very high. Your heart rate stays high. Your RPE stays high. But because the recoveries are active, they should be like a jog, but not a plod. So to give my example, I would generally run them at about 5 minutes per kilometer or 8 minutes per mile. But then my ons would be between 3:10 to 3:20. So around 5K pace, maybe working towards 3K pace if I progress a bit in the second round, which I would approach it in that way. Try to do the first round in a way that you know that you can do it. And then if you feel good, then progress it in the second round. 5 minute easy jogging between the two rounds. So that gives you 20 minutes total of on work. And each round ends up being about, I haven't done the math here, but I think it's 16, 17 minutes that each round is, including the active recoveries. And the effort should be about 5K pace. 5K pace or slightly faster. And the off, like I said, an easy jog, but not a plod. So that's the session.
Love that session. I definitely use it myself or very similar versions. And I like the descending rep duration as well. So you can really hold that form as the fatigue builds.
Yeah,
I don't really have anything to add.
All right, let's maybe go into our sponsor break here for Precision Fuel and Hydration. Precision Fuel and Hydration create carbohydrate products and electrolytes, and they are available at Ironman races globally. They are the hydration partner of Ironman, and they will be at basically any Ironman race that you will go to. So I would encourage listeners, if you haven't already, go to precisionfuelhydration.com. They have a fuel and hydration planner. It allows you to basically find for your race, for your speed and so on, your optimal carbohydrate intake and fluid intake, sodium intake. But it doesn't just account for you as an athlete and your speeds and so on and the weather, but it actually takes the course into account. So you can choose there from a number of courses across the world, including many of the Ironman races, that this is the race I'm doing. And then it pre-populates basically a lot of the information with weather data, how long the bike might take if it's a hilly bike, all of that sort of thing. So that's a super good tool. And it can, I think at the very least, it's a very good starting point that you can try to use some of that advice in training and then adjust from there. Very underutilized, I think, still, even though it's right there in the top part of the website. So check out the Fuel Hydration Planner. And if you want to buy any of their products, use the code thattriathlonshow26. Sorry, is that the code? Remind me, Jack, what is the code? TTS2026. That is the correct code. So that's the code you should use to get 15% off your first order.
I didn't know about that feature. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's been around for a while, but now it's very much extended with them being the global partner of Ironman.
Nice. I knew about the planner, but I didn't know it had the course specifics in there. That's awesome. Nice. All right. Mine, session number 4 then.
Yep.
So this is a kind of LT2 threshold progression session. So the structure is 2 sets of 3K, 2K, 1K with short recovery between the 3K, after the 3K and after the 2K. And a full recovery between sets. So the intensity we want to kind of build from just below LT2 for the 3K. The 2K is around about LT2 or around about threshold. And then the 1K is just above. So the purpose of this compared to more of a classic LT2 session, which I do have later on in my rankings, is that we get a little bit more shuttling in between the two sets there, rather than just riding and at kind of maximum lactate steady state. And yeah, it's to be used a little bit more sparingly than a classic threshold session, just because of the demand. And I typically like it in more of a kind of build phase, as after a decent base, and we've got quite a bit of threshold or more classic threshold work under our belt. And yeah, it's also looking at durability a little bit there as we are descending the pace through the set. So yeah, that's my LT2 progression session.
That sounds like a session that would be really good to do when you're building towards a 10K or a half marathon. It would be quite specific for both of those distances in its own way, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, for sure. I guess, yeah, within the context of triathlon, it's probably more of an elite specific session. But yeah, I mean, physiologically speaking, I think it has a place in most people's plans. But yeah, no, you're right. It's definitely a nice kind of 10K specific session there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. And I think the just a general point about using slight variations of paces, it seems like we have both already had sessions on our lists with that. And I think that's quite useful in running, because in cycling, we get a lot of that naturally through terrain and even through cycling in groups for those that do that sort of thing. In running, it's a little bit more easy to just, for a lot of people, to just get stuck in one or a few different paces. And I think it can be quite useful to have some sessions in the rotation that make you do some more variations of pace. And because again, like I said, with my session that varied paces, I think that's a different stimulus to the body than just one pure pace the whole time, even though those sessions also absolutely have their purpose. My number 4 is a hill rep session. This one is treadmill specific, unless you have a very long hill and somebody to come and get you from the top of the hill. It's 4 to 6 by 8 minutes at a tempo effort. So I would call that RPE 6 out of 10, zone 3 marathon effort, 85% of heart rate max, or there or thereabouts, on a 5 to 10% grade on a treadmill, like I said. I tend to use a 3-to-1 work to rest ratio here, which would mean 2 minutes and 40 seconds easy jog at 0% grade as recovery. So I would try to build up to 6 by 8 for faster runners, but for a lot of runners, even if you just do 4 by 8, that's in itself a pretty good session, because especially if you build up the grade to 10%, that's going to be quite a different stimulus than doing 4 by 8 minutes at tempo, but just on the flat. And I think this is a particularly good session for triathletes, because triathlon, I think, much more so than running, is really strength based. It's about running not fast, but running well under fatigue and really being able to tolerate that fatigue. And I think that's what this session does. It helps you build up the muscular endurance and fatigue resistance that is really going to be beneficial, especially in half and full distance triathlons. So this is a session that I might use less with pure runners, but definitely with triathletes, I find it very good. And you can do non-treadmill versions. I've done non-treadmill versions where I just try to get to between 30 and 40 minutes worth of work on a 3-minute hill. Just go up 3 minutes, come down at a pretty active recovery. It takes quite a long time though, because it ends up being more of a one-to-one work to rest. So that ends up being a long run pretty much, but it's definitely works. And I think that session has also, I've had lots of success with that kind of session as well, outdoors.
Yeah, I love this one. I'm yet to have a go at running up a mountain like that, but I've always wanted to after seeing the Norwegian boys do it on a regular basis. And I think the run up and down the same climb works really well as well. I've also had a lot of success personally and with athletes with that session. So yeah, I guess I would add, I mean, I have done a block of this session on a treadmill and I actually got a bit of a knee injury off the back of it. I'm not sure, obviously there's so many factors that go into that to kind of injuries, but that was one of the few things that I changed. I don't know if it was me, a particular kind of weakness of mine, but I have spoken to physios and they said that there is a bit of a risk with it. So maybe something to be a little cautious of there.
Yeah.
But as I said, I completely agree. It's an awesome session, awesome stimulus, especially for triathletes.
Yeah. I would actually love to hear what the physio said. What is the what is the mechanism behind that? I do believe that, but I don't quite understand why. What is it anatomically or mechanically that happens to make it a knee? Because running uphill generally it would engage your posterior chain a bit more. So it's interesting, right?
Yeah, no, I wish I could tell you. Yeah, something to do with the belt and the angle and but but I guess it kind of leads on nicely to my number three, because I've got the a classic threshold Norwegian style heavy intensity zone 3 type session, but on the flat. So conversely to my last threshold progression session, where we're kind of going through that LT2, this is where we're riding that line. And the example set here that I like is 3x2K, 4x1K. So we got 10K of volume there. And the purpose really is just to maximize time just below maximum lactate steady state without accumulating too much fatigue. And so the lactate is going to be, 2.5 to 3.5 millimoles. And this is a great session really to kind of have in there throughout the year, I think. The rationale for having, I like to start off with slightly longer reps and go down to shorter reps, because we can maintain the pace and get a bit more mechanical load in the back end while still keeping the internal load the same. And yeah.
My only question is, spikes or no spikes?
If you can handle it, then go for it with the spikes. I personally can't, but yeah, it's a big session with spikes, but obviously Christian's ginormous calves can handle it. And so maybe we should be adopting the spikes a little more often.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a great session. I've done, basically it's a session that I use a lot. I've gone all the way to 6x2K, 4x1K relatively recently. And I think it's just about, we talked about this in previous episodes, but if you got your threshold pace right, you can really accumulate quite some volume there. And of course, it's not easy, but it's doable.
Yeah, I've done this. Yeah. That's personally, same experience as you know. For sure, it can definitely progress that volume up.
Yeah.
If you get the intensity right.
Yeah. My next session is not too dissimilar. It's a shorter threshold session, but a steady threshold session at the same intensity or similar intensity. So basically, if you know that your threshold pace is XYZ, then I would say start 10 seconds per kilometer slower than that, or 15 seconds per mile slower than that. And if you feel good, you can progress through the session and end up right at threshold. That's how I tend to prescribe or recommend pacing here. So I'm going here with 4 minute intervals. So you could do anywhere from 6 to 15, I would say. But a typical start of a progression for me would be 8 times 4 minutes. And then between 8 to 12 tends to be the sweet spot for a lot of people. And yeah, and like I said, 8 times 4, perhaps if I would have to pick one number, is a really good starting point, 8 times 4 minutes. And the rest here, I would give that same 3 to 1 work to rest ratio. So 1 minute 20 seconds of passive rest.
Yeah, nice. I realized I didn't even do recoveries on my session. So
yeah, what are the recoveries that you would have used there?
Yeah, 1 to 2 minutes off the off both really. It doesn't, if you need much longer than that, then you're going too hard. And yeah, so
yeah,
1 to 2 minutes really. Ratio similar, I guess. My session number two then.
Yeah,
I think. So this is a 20-minute progression run. So 3 continuous blocks of 20 minutes at progressively faster paces. There's a theme here, right, with all the progression going on across these. But this one is in the title, progression run. So in terms of pacing, you want to work backwards from the last 20 minutes, which should be about 10 to 15 seconds slower per 10 to 15 seconds per kilometer slower than your second threshold, your LT2 pace. And then each of the blocks before that should be another 10 to 15 seconds slower. So the example is for someone with a threshold pace of about 4 minutes per K, then the first block of 20 would be about 440 per K, the second block 425, and the third block 410 per K. And the RPEs should be about RPE 5, and 6 and 7 for each of those 20 minute blocks. And this is quite tough, I guess. A bit more of you would want to progress up to this as well. So I'd probably start off with more like 3 by 15 minute blocks, or 20 minute, 15 minute, 10 minute, and then increase up to 3 by 20. The first block should be below LT1. If you're a very anaerobic athlete, then you might have to be even easier for this first block. And if that is the case, then maybe this session isn't the best for you. But again, as we've talked about, these progression kind of sessions is great for durability in triathlon and these longer road races where you're having to run fast under fatigue. And to make this a really, really specific kind of 10K or half marathon session, you can progress through LT2 for the last block, but that is a real kind of race simulation type session, and you want to use that quite sparingly. But yeah, this is one of my favorite sessions.
Yeah, I really like that. I've done lots of similar sessions like that. Actually, as you were talking, I was thinking that's the session I should have put as my bonus session, perhaps, or even put it on top 5. I've basically, the session that I remember the most vividly that I've done a lot is progress by 3Ks, a long run, all the way up to 30, 32 kilometers. And every 3K you progress by, I can't remember now, this was when I was coached by David Tilbury Davis, so it's one of his sessions, but maybe we progressed by 10 seconds every block. But because you get 10 blocks within a 30 kilometer run, you start with a really easy warm up, but then you end up right at LT2, and I would always probably go a bit too far there and finish a bit faster than LT2, which,
that's a brutal session.
It is brutal. But yeah, this was during the lockdown period, actually, that I was doing this session. So I was just really absorbing training well, because there was nothing else to do other than work and train. And this session worked really well. But yeah, it's a hard one. It's very brutal. But yeah, I like that progression. That being said, I remember vividly an interview that I did many years ago with Jason Koop from Carmichael Training Systems. And I can't remember what the context was, but he was talking about progression runs, and he was saying that they are a terrible idea because basically you're not maximizing the amount of work that you're doing. And because if you're maximizing the work that you're doing, then you would, I don't know, you would structure it in interval format or even like something super steady, like a long Canova marathon style, like 90% of marathon pace run, that kind of thing. What And I don't know, anecdotally, I don't agree with that. I think progression runs work really well, but what would you say to that argument?
I mean, yeah, I agree that it's not the way to most efficiently get time at a set intensity, right? Because you're having to almost waste time going through the progression, but that in its nature makes it why that's its strength as well, right? So you can have this in, I like to have this earlier in the base phase where you're not ready to hit these big kind of more tempo type sessions where we're riding straight up to whatever intensity and holding it. So this is a nice way to kind of have that introduction, see where you're at. And if you keep it controlled, then it shouldn't be super, super tough. As long as because I mean, you're still for that last 20 minutes, you're still 10 to 15 seconds below LT2, right? So where am I going with this?
I like that. It's a tool in the periodization toolbox where you use it as a bridge to doing more work at a certain intensity. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I was going to say is if we look anecdotally at every elite runner is doing this session type as well, right?
Yeah.
In triathlon and running. So yeah, I agree, maybe looking at it from a sports scientist perspective, but you know, the sports scientists don't know as well as, you know, what everyone is doing at the top of the sport. So I think also it's just for me, and this is the theme a little bit, right, is people go too hard on the run when they're trying to execute those session types that he was describing. So this is a nice way to really make sure that we're getting those more general kind of aerobic, you know, mitochondrial kind of type 1 type adaptations without overshooting things if we were to just try and hit a tempo runner off the bat, because people are more comfortable, I think, starting out a run more slowly when they know they're progressing through, right? Whereas if you say, I want you to hold this intensity, then they're like, well, my intensity is at that, so I'm going to go out at it. And if they overcook it from the beginning, then they're not getting any of that initial adaptation, right?
Yeah, and I guess another argument for doing a progression like this is that one of the main goals of the session is that you want to, at the end of a reasonably long run, you want to do a 20-minute block at that kind of relatively close to LT2 type intensity, then what is the best way to achieve that? Well, the best way to achieve that might be to do it as a progression run, because if you don't prescribe anything, maybe depending on the athlete, they might go too hard. Or if you prescribe something that's a bit more close to that intensity earlier on, then that might also be too much for the athlete to achieve that final block that you're looking for. And I think a good analogy that a lot of people would be familiar with is the red mist session in swimming, where you do 4x400 at basically 4 seconds slower than your critical speed or your swimming threshold. Then you do 3x400, then you do 2x400, then you do 1x400. The 1x400 is still 1 second slower than your critical speed, which should be very doable. But when you do it as the final of 10 400s, it's like it's close to an all-out effort at that point. But if you have managed that progression well and you didn't go too hard in those earlier steps, then you are able to do it. You need to have a good, reasonable base endurance, of course, because it's a long session, 4K. So work on the swim for most people is quite long, but still, yeah, I think that's a way to, the progression is a way to manage and make sure that you can achieve at the end of a big set and at the end of accumulating a lot of work, you can still achieve good quality, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also, it kind of protects people when they're having a bad day a little bit as well, right? Because that may work in theory on a good day, but we all know that that's not happening. If I tried to do that session today, even if I got the pacing bang on at the beginning for where I know my threshold is at the moment, I would have kind of still failed that session, right? So it kind of catches to that. And I guess this all goes back to the kind of art of coaching versus science, right?
Yeah.
And how it's not as simple as maybe it seems.
No. I mean, yes and no. Sometimes it's easier than, or like not easier or simpler, but there's two sides to the same coin. Sometimes sometimes just looking at, well, what are sessions that a lot of people are doing, a lot of really good people are doing.
Yeah,
that's also a way to look at it, and that has merit. You shouldn't just look at that, because that is a bias in itself. But I mean, I think it should be one input. All right, my number two then, this is that second variation that I alluded to for my marathon specific session. So this one is on the same theme. It's a descending, it's a progressive type of session. So, but in basically rounds of faster, 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 a little bit of rest, faster, faster, faster. So 4 to 6 rounds of 4 kilometers each, with 1 kilometer at 10 seconds slower than marathon pace, or 15 seconds per mile, 1 kilometer at marathon pace, and 1 kilometer at 10 seconds per kilometer faster than marathon pace, and then 1 kilometer at a steady recovery, so that marathon pace plus 30 to 45 seconds per kilometer, or 45 to 70-ish per mile. And yeah, roll through that. If you roll through that 4 times, then you end up with 16 kilometers total, or 12 kilometers of work. If you roll through it 6 times, then you end up with 24 kilometers for the whole set, or 18 kilometers of work. And so, yeah, that's a session, similar principle to the other one, that slight variation. It's still very specific, because the work is all very closely tied around the marathon pace, but that variation gives you a bit of a different stimulus. And it also has some other advantages, like making it a bit more mentally, if anything, bearable than just steady marathon pace. I should also add that both of these sessions, the marathon-specific sessions, I have adapted both of them as well for things like Ironman-specific sessions or Sentinel 3-specific sessions. I think these principles can be used for other races, not just a marathon, even though the way I list them here, it's as marathon-specific sessions.
How would you adapt them for Ironman-specific?
For Ironman specific, I would probably do slightly longer blocks, because the pace is easier. So might do fewer rounds, but the blocks themselves might be not 1 kilometer, they might be 2 or even 3 kilometers. And it might also be that the block that is slower than Ironman pace is shorter. So it might be 1 kilometer slower than Ironman pace, 2 kilometers at Ironman pace, and 3 kilometers faster. Because Ironman pace for most people isn't a very fast pace. This depends. Like, this would be a bit different if you're coaching Patrick Lange or somebody like that, but for most age groupers where it isn't that hard, I would adapt it a bit like that. For a half marathon, to be honest, it would be quite similar to the marathon, because the pace of a 7.3 for most age groupers for a lot of age groupers is similar to marathon pace. So it could be quite similar, but I wouldn't go to 6x4 kilometers, because that's longer than a half marathon. So yeah, you would maybe stick to 4 to 5 there. And yeah, that's basically how I would do it.
Yeah, nice. No, I use something similar. So session number one for me, if I go for it?
Yeah, go for it.
So this is the Kenyan style fartlek. So the other sessions we talked about today, or I've talked about, mostly been, I guess, quite guided by pace, other than the hill reps. And whereas this one is basically hard efforts around undulating, rolling terrain. Obviously, the Kenyans do it on the dirt roads. There's a famous session that they do every Thursday, I think, and they get hundreds of elite runners. And basically, they change the variation slightly each week. It's similar to your session, your VO2 max session, in terms of the kind of ratios, but the intensity, I guess, is a little bit lower and the volume is a little bit higher. So it's more of a kind of fractional utilization, lactate clearance type session, rather than a more pure VO2 type session. So the most common format they do is 1 minute on, 1 minute off, kind of 20 times or so, or 2 minutes on, 1 minute off, or they do pyramids where they do 1 minute on, 1 minute off, 2 minute on, 1 minute off, 3 minute on, 1 minute off, and go back down. The hard efforts are around kind of half marathon, 10K to half marathon pace, and the recovery is a little bit slower than marathon pace. So it's not super slow, super easy. And as I said, not looking at pace, even though I've just said about the kind of effort level, it's not, the pace wouldn't relate to those distances. It's effort, so it's done by feel. And yeah, you kind of basically, it's good to, if you can do mimic the Kenyans and find a group of similar level guys, and you just get out onto some rolling country roads or something, agree on the ratio, the format, and then you just hit it out for 40 to 50 minutes.
But that's 40 to 50 minutes, including the on
including
and off.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's really good. Yeah. To be honest, I haven't really done that session. I've done some similar sessions, but where the offs are more, let's say, easy jogging. So I have never really tried that session as it is prescribed, but I'm definitely curious and keen. It does sound really amazing. And especially when you do it in a group.
Yeah, I mean, I did a camp in Kenya and I didn't actually attend the session because I had a plan when I was going out there, and that was my biggest regret, is sticking to the plan. So I wish I just made the most of it and joined in a couple of these sessions.
Yeah,
I guess that's the theme of the last session, is to just get involved with what you have. If you got a group that are doing some random hit out, just get involved. It doesn't need to, don't need to overcomplicate it. Run hard over some hills and you get, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, that's a good message. My number one is very similar to your number two or number three, your long threshold, the 2Ks and 1Ks. So mine is long threshold reps. I went with 8 minute reps here. So 4 to 8 by 8 minutes, 4 by 8 will already be a good session for a lot of people. But if you're at the pointy end, you can build up to 8 by 8 minutes. And the rests here would be that 3-to-1 work rest ratio is what I would go for. So 240. And because that's a longer rest, it would no longer be passive in my book, but it would be an easy active rest. So easy jog rest there. And the pace would be starting at 10 seconds per kilometer slower than threshold, or 15 seconds per mile slower than threshold, and building up if you can towards the end or through the session, and or if not, then just staying there the whole session is already a very, very good session. So that's it. Accumulate a lot of time at fairly long threshold intervals. And yeah.
Nice. Love that. No, as you said, I already have that one in there. So yeah. Good choice.
So actually, before we go to upvote and downvote, I was thinking about this when I was doing my list, about differences and similarities between this list and the bike and the run. And I think at least for me, one clear difference that stood out was that my swim and bike lists had a bit more focus on VO2 sessions. And yeah, I had my fartlek here on number 5. But on the run, especially in a triathlon context, I tend to maybe use that a bit less, or I do tend to use that less on the run, because you can get a lot of stimulus on the swim and the bike for a VO2. It's not fully transferable, it's partially transferable, so you still need to do some on the run, I think. But I would consider it a bit less important, and also because the run comes last in a triathlon, so you're always going to be a bit more, it's more about running strong under fatigue. And so that takes precedence on my list. But then the similarities to my swim, and especially to my bike, is those sort of kind of longer or threshold sets in general, but yeah, doing them at the right intensity. Not that doesn't mean easy or anything, but you know, doing it at a pace where you can accumulate quite some total duration, whether you do shorter reps like 4 minutes or longer like 8 minutes, being able to accumulate quite a long time there. And that's something that I had similarly with the bike. I'm not sure if I explained that really fully when we did our bike episode, but that's definitely the intention, that you should be able to go all the way up to 1 hour's worth of threshold work if you're more of an advanced athlete.
Yeah, no, I agree. Obviously, the run in triathlon is more strength-based, so you don't necessarily need that intensity for the kind of specificity. But I think it's sometimes easier to execute the VO2 max work on the run, right? Just because you can really get the heart rate up more easily.
Yes.
That's true. One on the flip side there, I would say. But then on conversely to that, the injury risk is obviously a lot higher as well, right? When you know, the saying speed kills on the run is not this. It's definitely true that adding the more intensity there increases that risk quite substantially, more than it would do by equivalent intensity in the bike and run. Yeah. I guess both of us have some more like open style sessions for open run races as well, though, right? Yeah. Rather than on the swim and bike, we were more purely triathlon focused with our sessions, right?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. I guess another thing is that in at least on the bike, we had some sessions that were not on the swim as well. Like you had your bands on the bike. Mm. I had my sprints that are not necessarily, you know, what we would see in a tight box. We wouldn't see those as sessions, right? But and I was thinking about doing things like hill sprints or strides, so adding that to my list here. But in the end, I didn't fit 100%. It in. But they're very good still.
I went through the same thought process as well with the strides. I thought that's definitely going to be in there, and then I kind of ran out of space. So, and yeah, it's super important, right? As well, it should be on one of our lists. Strides, like
I'll add it to the warm up of every one of my sessions.
Yeah, no, that's a nice way of doing it, and that's pretty much the way I for sure. That's a good point.
So let's do the same that we've been doing and do one upvote and one downvote for each other's session. So I'll give you my list again, so you remember it, and I'll just do the top five, not the bonus one. So number five was the fartlek. Number four was the treadmill strength endurance, which might be your downvote. Number three was the shorter threshold reps, the 4-minuters. Number two was the marathon specific descending reps, and number one was the long threshold, the 8-minuters.
I'm going to update the VO2 max fartlek session. I use that a lot, so I don't know why I don't actually have it on my list. Or not a lot, but I do use it in pretty much every athlete at some point. And the downvote, I guess I'll downvote the marathon session, not because I don't like it, but just because it's pretty high up there, and this is a triathlon podcast, so
yeah, fair enough.
So mine were the 1-minute hill reps, the LT2 progression session, then the classic LT2 threshold session, then the 20-minute block progression run was number two, and then the Kenyan style fartlek was number one.
Yeah, I think I might wait. Say your list again.
We had 12 by 1-minute hills. We had threshold progression, which was 3K, 2K, 1K going through threshold twice through. Then the threshold classic, which was 3 by 2K, 4 by 1K. The 20-minute progression with the 20-minute blocks. And then the Kenyan style fartlek.
Okay.
Number one.
Yeah, I'm not going to even consider the classic threshold because I basically had the same session. So I'm going to consider the other ones. I'm going to upvote the Kenyan fartlek. That seems amazing. So
it's number one already, though.
It's number one already, but upvote here means like
it's
got my stamp of approval.
You're giving it the kudos.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, there was one other one that I was thinking that I would really consider that one as well. But no, that's the one. And downvote, I'm going for the progression run, not because I don't like progression runs, but maybe I would prefer slightly. I don't know. I don't know the 3 20-minute blocks. I might just modify that slightly. Either do some shorter blocks, or maybe even do some shorter blocks and work through more paces. I guess would be maybe my small preference. But that being said, I use something quite similar to that for things like for Ironman. Using something like that works quite well when you want to accumulate a lot of time and maybe even going through that twice. But that's not the exact session that you said. So yeah, I'll download that. That's maybe the one I would be the least likely to prescribe.
Nice.
Cool. Right. I also had one other thing that I wanted to touch on here. Since we're talking about running, you could call it a public service announcement. It's about run and run pace percentages. So for listeners that are using Training Peaks, for example, or other platforms, you might be familiar with how you can build your workouts in a workout builder, and you have your threshold set in the settings, and then you set, oh, I want to do these intervals at 90% and or this easy run at 70%, whatever it might be. But then there's also and then you just set it and you get the numbers, it spits out your paces, and that's all fine and dandy. And then there's also the fact that people have maybe read about Canova style training that we touched on, which is very heavily using percentages of marathon pace as a basis. We also talked a lot about that with John Davis, who was a very popular guest in episodes last year, about more about marathon training and running in general. The thing that I wanted to talk about is that those two versions of using percentages of run paces and speeds are fundamentally different, or not fundamentally different, but they're different, because what Training Peaks does, and I think other platforms as well, but I haven't verified that, is that they convert the pace that you have as your starting point, usually your threshold pace, to a speed. So if your threshold is 5 minutes per kilometer, which is 8 minutes per mile, it will convert that to kilometers an hour or miles per hour. So in this case, it would be 12 kilometers an hour. And if you set 90% of that, it would calculate 90% of 12, which would be 10.8 kilometers an hour. Then it would take that 10.8 kilometers an hour, convert it back to pace, which would be 5.33 per kilometer. But with Canova, it doesn't do this conversion to speed. It just takes pace. So 5 minutes per kilometer is 300 seconds per kilometer. So you would take 10% of that, 30, you'd subtract or add those 30 seconds, because basically 90% means 10% slower in that terminology. So you would add 30 seconds and you would get 5.30. So okay, 5.30, 5.33, not a big difference. But if we're looking at 70% or 80%, which you might do for 70% for easy endurance, 80% for more steady endurance, then these differences can be very big. For example, 70% of 5 minutes per kilometer would be 6 minutes 30 per kilometer in Canova system, in a pace-based system, but it would be 7.08 per kilometer when you use Training Peaks or a speed-based system. So there the differences are suddenly huge. So I just wanted to raise that, because even when I was preparing this episode, I was thinking about, should I give these, instead of giving plus 10 seconds, plus 15 seconds per mile, should I give percentages? And I was like looking at the calculators and things like that. And I was like, well, actually, then I need to explain which calculator, and it might not be very clear to a lot of people that there are differences whether you use pace or speed. So instead, I chose to go with just pure adding and subtracting a certain number of seconds. But I think it's maybe something that can be good for people to be aware of. I don't think it's fundamentally that important, because when you're running easy, let's say 70%, you don't really need to think about it as a percentage. You're just running easy. And when you get to those faster speeds, 90%, 100%, 110%, the differences are not very big, as we saw in that example, but they're still there. So it does matter a bit. And I think it's good to know that there are differences here.
So very, very good point. And I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of those different methods of calculation, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the whole percentage staying on Training Peaks across the board, to be honest, because I guess it's good for those, you know, coaches when you're just copy and pasting sessions across multiple different athletes and you have your thresholds there. So then it, in theory, individualizes the intensity, right? But we obviously know that there's a lot more that goes into that. You have different profiles of athletes and different different kind of outcomes. So the fact that you can't just put in the paces that you want in the workout builder is frustrating for me.
And this just
adds another level of complication to that.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I've done it is that because I use Training Peaks for my coaching, I've chosen to use that as my method of percentage. So even in the calculators for the training plans that I have, for example, they are aligned with the Training Peaks methodology, of course, in terms of how they are to be used, or the ready-made training plans use that kind of system so that it also works for the user. Mm. But what was I going to say? Yeah, about those paces. I think as well, I think it similarly to how those two different systems work quite well in when you're kind of close to threshold, I think it's kind of the same in a lot of workouts when you're up to threshold and relatively close, but it's at the extremes. Well, not necessarily extremes, but as soon as you go above threshold, I think there are definite differences that some people can go quite far above threshold for. Let's say they're 800s on the track, and some people are just barely above threshold. And when you go to the other extreme, your easy running, your endurance running, some people might need to run it. And this is especially true if you are a 2 hour 20 minute marathoner or 2 hour 10 minute marathoner, then your percentage at your easy running is normally going to be quite a lot lower than somebody who's a 3 hour 30 or 4 hour marathoner. So yeah, you might be running at 60% if you're a 2 hour 10 or 2 hour 20 marathoner, and 75%, and it feels equally easy, and it might even be correct in terms of your, like, you're still well below LT1 and all of that, but it's just biomechanically it's completely different for somebody who's very fast to run at 75%, which should be easy, but it's not really easy when you're that fast.
100%. And this is why I hate the whole zone 2 talk as well, right? Because you have elite athletes, or, you know, the zone 2 is actually quite hard mechanically, and in theory, metabolically they're in zone 2, but you're not going to be...
I mean, it's hard metabolically as well when you're that fast. Calculate just the amount of energy that you go through. It's super substantial. I mean, well above 1,000 calories per hour for
For sure,
strong athletes, well above.
But
that does remind me, actually, and this is something we can talk about later. But that would be good to do an episode about, because I was thinking about this yesterday, actually. What are the different, let's say, heuristics that we use for, especially for the two, like the fast twitch and slow twitch phenotype of athlete? That's quite an interesting topic. I tend to ask this question a fair bit in interviews or about athlete profiling and how that's used. And I find it fascinating. So it would be good, I think, for us to have that as an episode. We have a few others that we already have on the list, of course, but maybe that's something to just to put a pin in and have as a future episode on our list.
Let's do it. Watch this space, guys.
Yes, do that. All right. Well, let's start to log off for today. So show notes, as usual, you can find them on scientifictriathlon.com. And I will have an interview next week with Chris Johnson, a very good physiotherapist, so that I'm sure a lot of people have already heard of. He's doing some really great content as well. So actually, if you have questions for that, you will just about have time to get them in if you get them in on the day that this episode is released, and listener questions, that is. So email them to me if you want to send them in. But then we'll be back, I think, where Jack and I will be back the week after that. And also, I just saw that Training Peaks have raised their prices, so we need to promote our services a bit better to compensate for that. So coaching services, please check out scientifictriathlon.com. We have a full individual coaching, customized plans, consultations, and also ready-made training plans. So there's something for every taste and budget. And I wanted to read a couple of short pieces from the feedback forms we send out to athletes. These are not based on a honeymoon phase. They're when athletes actually stop working with us as coaches, or when they have finished a ready-made training plan. So in terms of coaching here, just from the latest piece of feedback that came in, one of the first questions that we ask is, how was it being coached by your coach? And the answer here is 5 stars. I achieved my goals, consistent training with no injuries, and the training plan was realistic with my work-life, work-life balance. Then in terms of training plans, the latest piece of feedback that came in was for the mid-volume base training plan. And one of the most important questions here is, what specific results or improvements have you accomplished with the help of the plan? And this is Brad here that answers, the 5 minute test in the critical power test, and the FTP increased by over 20 watts. I had a personal best 5K and won my age group and was 4th out of 204 people in that 5K. So obviously, it being a base training plan, no triathlon results as yet there, but great improvements across bike and run at least. And I also want to say that, the first one was from Fabian. I didn't mention the name, but I say it now because I made a note to myself that next time I need to look for some responses from women, because we do coach a lot of women as well. So I want to just mention that it's not just for guys. So have a look on scientifictriathlon.com if you want more information, and you can email me and if you have any questions or want to learn more or maybe sign up for coaching or anything, any of the other services that we have. That's it. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.